I thought it was always a movie. Was there actually a Harriet the Spy television show?
Oh, yeah. Let me see here. Burger,
burger. It was like a cartoon? It was like a cartoon deal or what?
No. It was one of those TV live action things.
I'd never heard of it.
Let me see where it is. Oh, dudes. All right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get sidetracked. Homeward Bound is on streaming on Netflix.
What's Homeward Bound?
We have never watched anything like Homeward Bound, where the pets just walk around and they're talking. Right? It's Michael J. Fox's voices and Sally Field's voice and Don Amici.
Yeah. No, we should do one of those.
Very few thieves would have the discernment to realize that this was one of the museum's most unusual pieces.
Susan Smith stole that fetish, and she was the one who planted it here.
The rest of your nine lives are going in one lump sum. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack episode 341, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, and I'm joined tonight by Brian. He was cheated out of the Penrose Fellowship, Dunaway.
Ooh. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Me here today because Cookie Monster trapped by suburban witch. Notice Cookie's on floor of cage look more crushed than it. Look like furry blue Muppet with no functioning esophagus went to town. Me like Mick Jagger. Can't get no satisfaction. Back off! Cookie Monster no taste good. How about me read you story instead, Blondie? Once upon a time, four guys sack movie. No, eat Cookie Monster. Cookie Monster eat you. Nom, 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 nom. Tastes like dirty heroin.
I'm trying to figure out why Cookie Monster at some point sounded like a bad Asian stereotype.
Yeah, that's pretty good, though.
Because Brian was choking on spit.
Perfect.
And was getting confused between me and Asian stereotype.
Perfect.
Oh, Cookie Monster.
Also with us, Randy Cat Catch Crotch Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Hello. Brian. Hello. Did I ever tell you guys about the time I ran a dispute resolution agency for mortals who find themselves opposed by evil creatures from the supernatural realm?
No.
Great little business. True story. You wouldn't believe how many people out there need help of this sort. So, we always had three vital rules for compromise with demons. Number one, always keep your promises. I mean, don't even trifle with promises. You just keep them. Nope. They'll get you killed every time. Number two, never doubt what other people tell you. Did a crazy woman just say that her pet hamster has killed 17 people over the internet? You believe it. Number three, most importantly, always be the person who is on the side of the supernatural entity. They hate having opposition. So you see, we at the agency were actually secretly always on their side. Mm. Oh, crap. I just revealed the fatal secret.
Oh, no.
I got to go. Randy out.
Now you're a giant lizard bug person. What have you done? Also with us, and finally, Brian, come out and slay a Ibbit.
No.
Come on, think about it, because it's got that guy in it from, from Warriors.
Kim, what's his face?
Yeah, no, the Warriors guy at the end. He's Warriors.
Yeah, Remar, okay.
Yeah.
But he wasn't the guy who said that.
No, he's from the movie where they come out and slay a. Get it? Okay. Slay
that's
it
very good. That's very good.
All right.
Golf clap. This won't be much better.
All right.
We need to give Scott a chance to do a greeting sometime.
That's true.
That's as close as I get right there. That's the one. This is my
week. Can't be any worse than me, Cookie Monster.
That's right. All right, Ibbit, what do you got?
All right. There once was a show, Tales from the Dark Side. It was no Twilight Zone, but heaven knows it tried. Even to Tales of the Crypt, it couldn't compare. But many of its stories ended in an ironic scare. They got Julianne Moore from As the World Turns, and James Remar from As the World Turns, and Christian Slater from As the World Turns. Haha, just kidding. It was on Ryan's Hope. They arranged three tales with some bookended bonding from a caged little kid and the singer from Blondie. And even the dude from the New York Dolls couldn't keep a demon cat from attacking his balls. So it's streaming on Netflix, and there are worse things you could do, like fire up a copy of Creepshow 2.
Oh my lord. Wow. That was incredible, man, dude.
You're a poet.
You killed it. Like, that's
I wrote that standing in line for Record Store Day this morning.
Oh, on nice. My phone.
Wow. We know how to get Brian the inspiration he needs. Send him to Record Store Day. No, seriously, that was amazing. Have we ever had a good rhyme like that? That was really good.
I've done a couple poems like that in the past.
I would say that's the best, though.
Strong entry. Real good thank stuff.
On,
yeah.
Yeah, on point.
Thank you.
So the movie is Tales from the Dark Side, and Scott Fletcher sent us this.
Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. A young boy tells three stories of horror to distract a witch who plans to eat him.
And that's all they give you on IMDb. They don't go deep into the three horror stories at all.
Yeah.
They just do, you know, whatever. That's how they do it.
Well, that's, you know, that's the most succinct description of it. I mean, that is what the movie is.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly right. So it's an anthology. It's a three-parter. Right. It's Creepshow-ish, Twilight Zone-ish.
Very Creepshow-ish, considering this is the director from Creepshow 1 and 2.
Yeah. And this was in sort of... kind of Creepshow 3 intended to be. In fact, the cat story, the Stephen King cat story, which was adapted to the screen screenplay by George Romero, of all people, was supposed to be a Creepshow 3 segment. Or no, Creepshow 2 segment, and got bumped because they found better
because
ones.
Because of budget concerns.
Yeah.
It's a one set, two person piece. Well, I guess they've got a couple extra people in flashback, including... ding 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 bell Salamanca grandpa
right
Breaking Bad,
right?
So many great people in that little scene. Actors in this movie,
in the whole thing,
so many cameos.
It's crazy, actually. Some of these
cameos before people were people.
Then it's like gonna be
before
this is gonna
Julianne
be,
Moore was
anybody, but she and it was anything. her first film as well. It's like her debut. And so,
young.
So what we're gonna have to do here. The last time we did one of these anthologies was the Tarantino
Four Rooms.
Yeah, Four Rooms. I think. So we want to probably, I guess, hit them in an order, sort of. Talk about each one and what's up. I guess I don't know. I mean, I don't want to make this too structured,
it's great because you could just shorthand it all. You got the witch, the mummy,
the cat
and the gargoyle. We got these four easy
mystical creatures. My favorite four episodes of Seinfeld.
Oh, they're the best. Oh, that one with George, so good. So wait a minute,
the
though.
Cat is a close talker.
When you say the witch, oh, Blondie's the witch. Got it.
Yeah.
Blondie's okay. The witch. All right. I never.
This makes the most sense because the credits roll on IMDb and on the movie in order of appearance, and Debbie Harry was the first person that showed up. However, they showed that right as a guy was riding around on a bike.
Yeah. So he got screwed
for a minute.
That guy got screwed.
Yeah.
So real quick here though, they call her part of this the wraparound. It sounds dirty, but whatever. The wraparound.
The reach around.
Definitely not the reach around. But the wraparound, it's kind of like Dan Aykroyd and that other guy in the car going, you want to see something really scary?
I think don't all of them have that? Like, so Twilight Zone had that one, right? Mm-hmm. The want to see something really scary. This had the Debbie Harry. Cat's Eye had the cat was the overarching piece.
Right.
It was running around and then it became the subject of the last story.
Wouldn't it have been easier just to have had the gargoyle who is a omniscient character anyway, watching everything? Wouldn't it make more sense for that?
You want to tell think is the cab driver should have been like a through line because it should have been
Buster Poindexter as the cab driver.
Yeah.
Scrooge. Scrooge. Was he cab driver?
Because he was the ghost of
Christmas present.
Christmas Smelly.
Yeah. Christmas Smelly.
Did Creepshow have a through line or a wraparound?
I think it did. Was it the, it was the guy that being tortured, right? Wasn't that the, or was that just the first story?
I don't remember. It's been so long since I've seen Creepshow. I just remember Stephen King had green hair or something.
Meh.
Wasn't that the deal? He had like some kind of, he was like a plant man or something and became.
Right.
Yeah. No, he found, he found a meteor and all of a sudden he started getting moldy.
Yeah. And I'm slightly, well, I actually, Randy, you can confirm or deny this, but I'm pretty sure Creepshow's been on our list before and then got.
It has.
Bumped. Yeah.
So I got a copy if you want me to send everybody one.
Well, we could do it that way. I mean, it keeps coming to Netflix and going away and then coming and going and like a lot
Dude,
of films.
You can pick up Creepshow from a Walmart bin any time of the week for like $2.
Yeah. By the way, the little inside info here for people listening at home. We have a Slack. We talk in all week and it's, you know, jokey this and planning that. And what are we doing this weekend and all this stuff to plan for FilmSac. And Dunaway is always up all up in that with photos of him at a Walmart with some 3-for-1 DVD deal saying, look at this. I can't believe I got it. You guys want a copy? Like, it's always.
It happens every week.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
You can always catch me in the Walmart digging in a bin, knees up to my knees.
I like that a lot.
By the way, just to put some closure on it and we'll get emails. So let's save it. Creepshow does have a through line. It's a kid in his room reading the Creepshow comic books.
Yeah.
That's right.
His dad yells at him for reading comic books and
It's the whole point.
And then he
kind of
says, I want you to go to hell, dad, or something like that. I learned it from you.
Yeah.
And then the crypt keeper kind of appears at the window.
Right.
So so everyone's favorite framing device in a film is the Princess Bride, right?
Sure.
Grandfather is reading to his sick grandson.
Columbo, comes in.
Okay, all right. What's your other one? What other film are you like? I love that favorite.
Okay.
Well, that's the thing. Usually, framing devices stink. Like it's a really bad idea to do that to a movie. But give me one where you're just like that made the movie for me.
Okay.
This one's pretty good, but in comparison only to the rest of the movie. I mean,
no, that's true. I mean, I can think of other examples that maybe, I don't know, you guys argue one side or the other of this one. Titanic is the one I think of every time.
That's a good example.
Old lady reminiscing about where the stone came from and how she was naked at one time. Like that whole thing.
Right. Oh, and also, here's my favorite is Usual Suspects.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. That's
verbal
a good one.
Getting interviewed and recounting the story that way.
That's pretty much what you're talking about here is what makes the framing device so powerful when it's used right. And that is, for example, in Titanic, when the old woman drops the gem into the ocean, priceless artifact, it's a punch in the gut.
Yeah.
And it's only possible because of the framing device. In Usual Suspects, the big twist at the end, right? You could never build that any other way.
Right.
It's a big twist and a surprise because of the fact that you've been cutting back to this guy talking throughout the whole film.
Sure. I can't think of any. I'm trying to think of some others, though, and I'm having a hard time. I know there's a million.
Oh, you love The Notebook. Somebody's screaming it right now.
I didn't see that.
The Notebook!
I've never seen The Notebook. Yeah, we got a. we discussed on this very podcast that we need to at some point make that our first romantic sad movie thing because The Notebook is so iconic, I guess, but I've never seen it. I have no idea what that thing's about.
I've seen it.
We've talked about FilmSack films where we're like, you know what, maybe they should have made a better movie in the middle and they wouldn't have needed that thing. So like 300, remember the narrator?
Oh, there's another one.
At the beginning, middle, and end, and we're like, you know, a better movie and you don't need that guy.
Yeah, you don't.
Like, it tells itself, the story. I hate to get the flack that I do when I say this, but Big Trouble in Little China has this problem as far as I'm concerned.
Sure.
It fits in with the cheese. It's a nice little topper.
Sure. It does. But I feel like that kind of, it takes away from the movie a little bit for me that the old man is talking to a lawyer and that's, the story is a story he's telling.
I assume that the Notebook is about a, late model Celeron based ThinkPad.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. Spot on. All you right. got it, man.
It's one of those pencil eraser nubs for a pointing device.
Yeah. So maybe they integrated the pad as well just because there's a little crossover. Some people still like the nub. Yeah. Who knows? I call them computer clitorises, actually, is what I call them.
Whoa!
So this movie is older. It's 1990. And
1990. And everybody I talked to said, you mean the TV series? And I go, no.
No.
The movie.
The movie. Yeah. In fact, it went as far as to say, Tales from the Dark Side, colon, the movie. Like, that's the title of this film. And all of the different stories are written by various people. The one that jumped out at me is Arthur Conan Doyle wrote the original Lot 249 story.
How'd you figure that out,
story.
Sherlock?
IMDb told me.
Oh, okay, good.
Sherlock, nice reference. It's pretty good. But it's you know, there's some stuff like that. The second thing, Stephen King wrote the short thing that it's based on, and then Romero adapted it for screen. It felt like Romero directed it, honestly, that whole second segment. That was the highlight for me. From a cheese standpoint, from a stupid standpoint, from a kind of genuinely gross standpoint, the cat thing is the best part of this thing.
God, I was so
really.
I don't even know if gory was the word I want to use. It's just so outrageously.
It's so bad.
Disturbing.
Yeah,
it's disturbing is what it is.
Disturbing and weird. And the William Hickey parts are great. And it's just a weird ass middle.
Okay, so now we got to go around the table, guys, because I disagree. I felt like as much as I like the old uncle from Christmas Vacation, I felt like that was actually my least favorite part.
Yeah, my least favorite story too.
Wow.
I think my favorite, if I watched this a second or third time and really like ruminated on it, I think I'd come away with the James Remar performance as my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time I've ever seen it, and I just watched through it really fast and made an opinion. The first segment, the mummy story. Yeah. Just because of the different actors, like it was so fun to see all these people and they're young and they're enjoying themselves, you know.
It did seem a little less predictable too, because my biggest problem with the James Remar story is the second she walked out of the shadow in that hall, I went, she's the creature.
So first time, Randy, you said is your first time seeing it?
Yes.
Same.
Anybody
here.
Same here.
And I used to watch the TV show, and I'm sorry to say, man, those TV shows were brutally over sanitized for television. This movie was like, oh wow, this is actually scary and gory, and like I kind of like it because of the fact that I didn't like the TV show for being so plain.
I'm asking you, Randy, because I want to know at what point you do figure out the twist in the James Remar story, because seeing it the first time, I was totally blown away by the ending. Now again, I was 20 years old or whatever,
right.
Back then, but I'm curious as to what point you say, oh, okay, well, so she's the gargoyle.
Yeah.
I actually never, I never got there. I'm still
not even convinced.
I knew of course, you know, the gargoyle's going to come back, right? Like there's no doubt.
Right.
And so when he starts making the little statuette, I'm like, Oh, he's going to inadvertently summon it. Like I actually was trying to, you know, I was making a little guess there, but I wasn't like sold on that. I wasn't pointing at the screen going, oh, he's going to ruin it all by making a statuette. And then it's going to get in, you know, I didn't think of it as that story as a big mystery to be solved. Like the second one, the Cat from Hell. It felt to me like there was a mystery to be solved, and then they never really solved it.
And wasn't. Yeah. Okay, it's just a bad cat.
I don't disagree with you guys. It's just that the second I saw her, I knew who it was, and this is my first viewing as well. And I had
really,
I was just like, how long till I know? In fact, I have a note in here saying, "Note to self: wrote this before I saw her," and I put that in parentheses after I put, "You knew it was the chick the whole time."
Wow.
Right.
So it seemed obvious to me. It was like, oh, of course she is. And then when they did the 10 years later, I'm like, well, I guess the surprise there was, let's see how they figure this one out, because I still knew it was her. I could just tell.
Interesting. I really liked that story. I really liked the turnaround that it's not, you know, that basically you think that basically he's the one the whole time. I'm going to say basically like five times, I guess. Think that he's the one who's kind of quote unquote cursed. And then you find out that, nope, she's the one, you know, this is kind of her story of like, maybe I can finally live a normal life, and oh no, somebody else did this and pulled me back into it.
Yeah. Kind of thing. She's Gozer the Keepmaster, man. She was nasty.
She's Gozer.
what's Dunaway's favorite bit?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be Lot 249.
Really? I love that we've got each one represented.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time I always go back to that one, because that's the one I always remember for some reason. I think it's because it's simple. It goes through. It's kind of got some twists and turns. It's having a lot of good fun. Mm-hmm. The gargoyle one I almost completely forgotten about because it's really slow, in my opinion. And I don't understand why they played it last. It seems like I would have put it in because the middle. Well,
because I think of the three of them, it's the only one that has a real surprise
gotcha.
Ending.
Gotcha. Like a gotcha.
The 249, I mean, the big surprise is, okay, now his friends are mummies because the mummy disemboweled and brain barred right. them the same way he was. But there really isn't a twist. It's not like now he's getting his own comeuppance for being a dick. Right. No, it's, you know, Steve Buscemi walks away the winner in the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
All because he has a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah.
Wow. Got a little scroll that he memorized, I guess.
He was wrong by not winning the Pell Grant or whatever the hell it was. And this was his comeuppance. It's like, okay, that's not a great, I don't know. Deficit to come back from and emerge the winner.
I like that you called it a Pell Grant. I wrote it down because I hate the names that they make up for this stuff. It was called the Penrose Fellowship.
Fellowship. That's what it was.
Do you notice the first two stories the first three stories, even the wraparound, were all played on our hate for rich people?
Yeah.
So it's like, it was like, oh, I hate these people. They're rich. Oh, hate them too.
Late 80s, early 90s bank savings and loan crash, 87 recession thing going on.
I would say they were following the Scary Movie rules more than that. Like, interesting. You know the Scary Movie rules, right? Like, so if you're a virgin and you have sex, you're going to die. And some of the rules include things like, always keep your secrets because, you know, like, in another story, don't be a liar. Like, you know, liars are going to get their comeuppance. Yeah,
classic,
sort of thing. Like
classic fairy tale.
Sure. But I think the financial stuff is a key point. I think that this was the era of Wall Street and that very movie and people hating on big finance and rich people who are snorting cocaine and screwing everybody else. And that whole thing was definitely kind of in the shitter then. Yeah, so I think it's a bit of both, but they did a really, I mean, I guess I should say overall, I mean, a lot of this stuff doesn't hold up. The gargoyle itself is shit, okay? It's bad.
Every one of these stories is stupid.
But it's fun.
It's fun.
I had a good time. I had a really good time with it, like I do with something like, you know, whatever. But I feel like I need to defend the cat segment just for a second, okay?
Okay. No. I don't think any of us really strongly dislike any part of this movie.
Right. But I only think you should be able to defend it if you do it in David Johansson's voice.
I'm unable to do it. But
Santa Claus.
As a fan of the New York Dolls, I will give him the reverence he deserves. But anyway, here's the deal. So that segment, the reason I think I liked it is because it was the one that I think all of these things need. It was the one weird psycho one. Like, the whole thing's like you'd hire a hitman for a cat. That's insane enough on its face. And it's the guy from New York Dolls, Buster Poindexter, cab driver man. He's your hitman. And then you got, you know, William Hickey going from his chair the whole time. And it's just like this great setup. The lighting and coloring is weird. The kind of noirish, like film noir kind of coloring to everything. And then at the end, instead of getting a reasonable ending or an ending that has some kind of resolution to it, instead you get basically I'm giving birth to a cat out of my mouth moment, which is the grossest freaking thing in the movie.
Grossest. I didn't even have to even write down what was Scott's, you know, grossest moment. And there's plenty.
Yeah.
But it had to be that,
it
right?
It was pretty gross. I think I may have had one grosser moment and I captured it on
audio. I'm
going to
say it's the mummy digging your hands inside the mummy looking for stuff.
No, that doesn't bother me because that stuff's all dirt by then. Who cares? And by the way, there's no way those onions are holding up the way they did.
Right.
There's no way. I kept thinking like, okay, well, he's more decrepit than the things inside him. It makes no sense. But anyway, I just want to put out there that sometimes you need the pointless, violent, ugly middle to these anthology horror things. And I think the cat one did that pretty well. And it's also at the same time ridiculous and stupid. It's a cat. Mm-hmm. Freaking kill the cat. It's no big deal. I mean, don't kill the cat.
But I mean, they don't even try to make the cat look believable.
Right.
I mean, in the scenes where they're fighting with the cat. I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's like
the cat, you know, runs up at the guy, and it's 20 seconds of Johansson
crutch grabbing.
Well, running backwards against a wall, screaming, instead of grabbing one of the 43 weapons he brought along.
Yeah.
You know, maybe maybe you have a swipe at the cat with a knife and miss and something like that.
Sure, he just, sure. And he talked to, I love how he talked to himself the whole time. That was my favorite bit is how he was going, you're a little bastard, are you? And he kept talking. I don't know why he's Irish.
It made me immediately nervous when he had that needle with the poison in it, trying to catch a cat. I'm like, you do not want to chase a cat with a needle. That's the last thing you want to do.
Yeah.
Right.
I also felt like
it didn't have a payoff.
Feel like William Hickey, his demise was a little underwhelming. Like, just to have a heart attack is boring. Like, let's have a little grosser moment there with him. But I guess they spent their effects money on the cat birth out of the mouth thing.
Yeah.
It was really foul.
Okay. Wait. I felt like all of the money spent on this movie went into the creatures, like all three creatures.
Oh, yeah.
And there was nothing left over for the wraparound at all. That was like the cheapest bit in the whole movie. Mm-hmm. Although I was impressed with the jail cell itself, you know, off the kitchen. Like, I don't know. There's just something about
Matthew Lawrence actually built that himself. That was a little child labor they did.
That would be amazing. That would be the best thing ever in a movie. Because if they brought Joey Lawrence's brother in.
Right.
We only knew him as Joey Lawrence's brother back then.
Exactly.
Right?
That's all we knew him as. He was nobody. Nothing. Yeah.
Did we even know him as that back then?
I did.
Because was before, wasn't that before anything? Like before he was on?
It wasn't before Joey Lawrence.
Oh, wait, that's not Joey Lawrence, though.
No,
it's Matthew Lawrence.
Okay, I'm just making sure everyone's not confused. Yeah. He's the kid from the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. He's one of Steve Martin's kids.
He's also the most prominent kid in Mrs. Doubtfire.
He was a real cute kid. He is now kind of a weird-looking 37-year-old adult and is in some movies you haven't heard of. So that's how that went for that guy.
Well, plus he played a pretty big role in Give Me a Break. Did you guys consume all of the Give Me a Breaks?
Yes, Nell Carter and
Oh my God, I had such a crush on that girl.
His most recent film. His most recent film is in post production. It's called Kurt. And that's it. Kirk. So, yeah, there's just not a lot of, like, Girl Meets World is the most prominent thing he's done lately. That was in 2015. He was
an after school, ABC after school special called Don't Touch.
Oh, Lord.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's no good.
That's a show that you really only needed the title.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, they don't need to make the whole show.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, when
no,
you
give me the title, I'm good.
I should make this
a teenager
clear.
Babysitting a girl, young girl discovers that she is being molested by a family friend when harrowing memories of her own past molestation by her uncle come to the surface.
Yeah.
ABC After School Specials, people.
Yeah, come on, get home from school. You know, you've had a hard 7-period day at school. Come on home and then watch that. Ugh, that's awful. He was a really cute kid. Now he's kind of bobbly headed, but whatever. He's fine. I have some clips of him saying words and he's all right.
And he's a better actor in that thing than Debbie Harry is, sadly. Deborah Harry just comes across as so stiff and wooden in her delivery of everything.
Is she in other things?
They just made her stiffer. Yeah. Like, honestly, I wish they had just made her into a caricature of a witch in day clothes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. Suburban Housewife, they were really just smashing them there, right?
Oh, they are related. I'm sorry, you guys were making this reference and it wasn't clicking with me. They were Joey Lawrence and Andrew Lawrence are related, and Matthew Lawrence.
It's his brother, right?
Yeah, they're brothers.
That's why I kept saying, whoa.
Yeah, no, you're right. I thought you were kidding, but you're right. I just thought they looked alike. Okay. All right. They're all from the same womb. They all came out of the same vagina. Yes. Got it. All right.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. Good. And I actually thought Matthew Lawrence was really good here. He was a lot younger than I expected. Like when I first realized, oh, there's a kid and he's going to have to do some acting. I was shocked at how he was like 9 instead of 13.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, he did a pretty good job for his age.
I agree. Mm-hmm. He's a good kid actor as kid actors go. He's 37 now and looking for love. let's see. I also wrote in this here thing that, let's see, Tales from the Dark Side, the movie is considered by many fans and Tom Savini himself to be the official Creepshow 3. The second story titled Cat from Hell was written by Stephen King and adapted for the screen by George A. Romero. and his giant glasses were originally intended for Creepshow 2. The story was later dropped due to budgetary concerns. So apparently the cat thing is expensive.
I can't imagine what. But yeah, okay, sure.
I mean, it's a rubber David Johansen face, and you've got to somehow teach a cat to climb out through it. And I think, I mean, I'm guessing that the cat's a puppet for part of that climb.
Have to be.
Yeah,
I hope so.
It's really just that last little getting the cat, you know, from waist out after the lips have been ripped to crap.
Yeah, that's so gross. Ugh. I mean, it's really effective practical effects, I guess. I made a GIF of it to last a lifetime.
The budget on this movie was $3.5 million.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
That's low, even at 90 standards, I'd say.
Right.
That's for the effects stuff, that's pretty good. Wow.
Yeah.
We would have a hard time making a $3.5 million movie of any worth today. Well, that's maybe not true. We could maybe make some, but you know what I mean? Like, to make something that gets on IFC or at the least and hits the Sundance film festival at the most, you'd have to spend easily that to get good actors and all that. But do you think they had any idea? I mean, Slater. He was already kind of having a moment. I mean, this was the same year as that Nintendo movie he was in, and he was doing other teen movies. And Heather
was before this.
Yeah, and he's on the verge of like Pirate Radio and whatever the hell else is about to come his way.
It's easy to ask, who do you think of these people turned out the most famous? I want to ask the question of all the people in this movie, who do you think ended up with the most money at their peak? Who made the biggest bucks?
I'd say Julianne Moore.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, Oscar nominations and wins and stuff. And she does everything. I mean, you know, you could argue that, well, Buscemi's made more movies it seems like all three, like when you look at a lot of the actors in this thing, Buscemi, Remar, and Julianne Moore, they all seem to take just about any script that crosses their desk.
Yeah, kind of. She stops doing that in the last 10 years and takes only roles that seem to be huge, but probably, yeah, I think she's the most prolific at any rate. She's the one with, you know, Oscar films and big budget films, and you know, she's in lots of indie darlings and things people remember. And, you know, she's naked a lot. I noticed that. That's a thing she does.
So now, were you asking rhetorically or do you actually have?
I don't really have a good answer.
Because Steve Buscemi is worth, net worth is $35 million.
This is according to networth.com.
Right. I think that's right. Yeah. Let's see.
Those websites are dubious, but we'll use it anyway. It's fine. Let's use it. So let's get her in there. What's Julianne Moore doing?
So let's see, the richest Julianne Moore, net worth $50 million. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Well, look up Radon Chong
just a little comparison here. Oh, yeah. Look up Christian Slater and Radon Chong. So,
Christian Slater's getting that nice resurgence because of Mr. Robot. TV. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, and they're right. That the other TV thing, the security firm, deal, whatever that was called. Yeah.
Now he also has a lien against him for $20 million because his dad's suing him. So, but if you subtract that, his net worth is $20 million. So he's flat broke if he loses that deal. Okay.
I just want to say, if you end up suing your kid, no.
Right.
It's just something.
Does he really? He has a lawsuit against him from his dad.
Christian Slater's being sued by his father for $20 million in damages from February 25th, 2016. But why? Who knows? Ruined. Mary Jo Slater ruined his acting career in the suit. Whatever, man.
Mm-hmm. Just saying. If you're suing your kid.
Is his dad's name AJ, by the way? Like, is it AJ Michael, Slater?
Michael Hawkins.
What was the name of the Saved by the Bell Slater kid? Not AJ. It was something like that.
Something like that.
AC Slater or something like that.
They're not related.
Yeah, AC Slater. That sounds right.
They're not related, though, right? I don't think so.
No, because that was the character's name.
That was, yeah.
Oh, that's his character.
Mario Lopez, I think, Extra or whatever he's doing now.
How about Robert Klein? I bet he's worth a lot of money.
Oh, Robert Klein was in this. I keep forgetting that you had Robert Klein and Radon Chong in this. Just
briefly.
Yeah. And Radon Chong, of course, the daughter of Tommy Chong.
Tommy Chong, yeah.
Yeah, Tommy Chong.
Cheech and Chong. She's the love child of Cheech and Chong.
Yeah. She has the most interesting face.
She does. She does. Yeah. And she's got, she's always got an interesting face. She's very, I find her very striking. She's very interesting to look at. And she was
in Commando. It wasn't as interesting.
Right.
Well, it was a Schwarzenegger film. So her only job was to show up and be a woman. Whereas in this movie, she gets to actually act and she's pretty good.
Yeah.
I thought she was.
Except when she's a gargoyle. Fine. That's kind of.
I mean, I will. You know what? And to give the third segment some props, it's the one with the best acting by far, I think.
Right.
And that says a lot because I think James Remar in other film sack movies we've seen Remar in are not great. He's kind of bad in them. Like, he tends to be really kind of all over the place. But then there are moments where you're like, oh, all right, James Remar kicking it out. Like, he was good in this. And I felt for him at the end, even though that puppetry stuff was terrible and those two goblin kids were just awful. I mean, that stuff was awful.
It was bittersweet.
Yeah, didn't
it really strike you when you realized the kids, he'd lost his kids too?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, it hurt.
He didn't lose the kids. He screwed the kids over.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah. Even worse.
Like, yeah. He didn't know that though. See, I felt bad for him. I mean, where it got my sympathy was anybody would do what he did. I mean, you need to be more specific if you're the goblin. You need to say, don't mention this. Give me your word you'll never say anything. Okay, I'll never say anything. Why? What? Why? Well, because if you say anything, goblins will come back no matter what you say. Oh, okay, cool. Then you'd never do it. Instead, you just kind of leave it vague, and he's like,
"Man, but that's the rules."
10-year, but
just
it's
like he can't tell, she can't tell.
10-year anniversary.
Because I said so. Should be the reason that the gargoyle gave. Because I said so. Okay.
Ten years of a blissful life with your wife you met in the alley is
making sweet love to an ugly gargoyle,
right? And you got these 10 years of life together, these children you're raising, you're happy as pigs in poo, and then you have to feel like you need to make this confession, you need to get it off your chest and say it. I mean,
so
the guy,
do you think
he was all genuine.
Just knew that she was a gargoyle.
I think where is he? You can't find him to ask him, can you? Because I'll bet he got eaten up. I'll bet he's gone. I'll bet that gynecologist has gone the way.
Because he went and told the story. You'll never guess what I saw today.
No, he died. I think he died in the inspection. I think he had a little,
It's going to be a little girl, but... why? Because obviously she doesn't want him to tell... To tell her that he saw a gargoyle that night. But then why, I think even during that first night they're together, why did she say, what were you doing out there last night?
She's not the bastion of honesty in this relationship. And that's my problem, I think.
Because
she's
cursed, right? I'm assuming that the backstory is that she's cursed. And the only way to resolve the curse is to hook up with someone who can keep your secret. Yeah. And if they lose your secret, then you're screwed.
It has something to do with being seen, right? Like, the curse on the gargoyle is that the gargoyle can't look into the eyes of another mortal, or something like it turns, or something like that, right?
Right.
Yeah. So it's the fact that he knows the gargoyle is a gargoyle that spins this all up into the plot. It's the thing at the end where I'm scratching my head, like, so wait. Now they're stone forever? Like, why didn't they turn to stone?
No, I think they were stone. Until she finds love again. I don't know.
And they were stone at the beginning. Well, how do you find love while you're stone?
But yeah, hey, how can you not find love while you're stoned?
I think it has to do with every 10 years. I think if she doesn't find love, and then that just goes on in perpetuity, then she stays stone for 10 years, becomes real.
For 10 years
has to eat a bartender and then and then has to find a mate.
I don't have I don't have enough in my life is the word perpetuity. I'm glad you used it today because I love that term. Love it. It's so bankery, it's like, well, we'll be paying that in perpetuity. But okay, fine, all that stuff being true, did she have to kill him? Why is that part of the curse that you had to waste?
I think she wanted to.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's a
She loved him, though. She even said, I loved you, too, and then just sliced him in the neck like a bat. That was
awful.
Well,
if I can't be with you, nobody can.
Yeah.
But you're dying.
All right. Maybe you guys are right. The third one is pretty compelling. It's an interesting... We're talking more about
it than
cats.
At least the cat makes sense.
Yeah.
The cat's a killer.
Could they turn that third one into a full movie, or is there just too little stuff in the middle of it?
Absolutely. I mean, because you could definitely increase the value of losing everything if you made it a bigger movie.
Yeah, but it would just drag it out
really
so long.
Their love.
You just drag it out so long.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think that middle bit is time goes by, they're having a happy life, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Right.
And the only way you could even inject any sort of interest in that is if he comes close to telling her a bunch of times, or she almost finds out, or he. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, and also just, I wouldn't have had that agent anymore. He was a dick. Be done with that guy.
Feature length films have to go somewhere. You can't just tell. You can't just tell a setup and then end the story kind of story in a feature length film. You have to go somewhere in the middle, which is why everyone hates the movie Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. And I don't see any of these stories having a meaty middle. You know, where are you going to go with this mummy story? The mummy is in a sarcophagus. Like, you have to tell the story within a few feet of that, you know?
Yeah. There's a reason anthology exists or short film exists. It's so you can do these bite-sized things and explore that stuff in the way that you couldn't with 2 hours, because you have to plot it out.
Yeah. This makes a better fable than it does a,
right.
Oh, well said. That's the perfect word. Yep. It's a fable. And these are dark fables, obviously, but clearly, there's an appetite for it, or was. Where are we now with this sort of thing? Does anyone do? I mean, we got Fargo on TV, but that's not quite the same. It's anthology,
but
and every season's
different.
There is
now the thing on Hulu, Dimension 404, which is kind of like a new Twilight Zone type show.
Well, Black Mirror.
Ugly mirror.
Dirty mirror.
Somebody hazy. Please clean the mirror.
Yeah. Hazy mirror.
This mirror's got a problem is what we're trying to say. Get us a new mirror. That's all we're saying. But yeah, there seems to be a new appetite for it coming out in that way. And it's usually technology based. And, you know, you play on the fears of the era. And right now, I think the fears of the era is mass surveillance and your information isn't safe. And blah, and Black Mirror's totally taking advantage of that. Sounds like the one Brian's talking about may delve in some of that.
It's a little bit lighter. It's like the Funko Pop version of Black Mirror.
Nice.
It's like light that. And fluffy as opposed to.
Don't you think 30 years from now we're going to look back on movies from like 2015 and go, not everyone was on YouTube and not everything about Facebook, your smartphone was a drama, you know?
Right.
I don't know. Will. I mean, I feel like as ubiquitous as going into a bar was in movies from like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, right.
I think the equivalent is people on Facebook or on social media or on their smartphone. I think that that's like it's just an accepted, every character, you don't recognize it because every character does it.
Yeah, it's a drive-in burger joint in the 50s. It's a bar in the 70s.
If you were to watch You've Got Mail now, I'm sure, and I haven't seen it since it first came out, but I imagine if you were to watch it now, it'd be like, so what? They're going to AOL check an email. Who the hell cares?
Yeah. I'll bet that is a shitty movie to watch today. I'll bet it sucks.
I'll bet the novelty.
I bet the email is very, I don't remember much about the email.
And you're not even touching on the reason it's so ancient, and that's because it's about a bookstore war.
True story. Yeah, when bookstores were going out. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird.
Borders or something.
Listen, to answer Randy's question,
Fox
when,
Books.
When you're Fox. Way in the future, you're 30 years in the future, and you're looking back at 2015, you will remember one thing. That's Mad Max Fury Road. That's it. What else is there? Because that's all that will stand out. That's all that will keep going and still hold up. And we'll all be looking at old
I'm
Tom
almost
Hardy.
Wondering if you get some sort of kickback from George, George Romero was this thing.
George, oh geez, you've just killed it because of the Romero part.
Yeah, you
George,
just killed his money.
George
way to go.
Williams, no more George revenue Franklin, from him. George. Ah, what is wrong with me?
George Miller.
Yes, George Miller.
I think you get some sort of George Miller kickback by bringing up Mad Max on every episode.
just an HJ when I go to California. It's fine.
I'd actually say
it's a drinking game.
Yeah.
I feel like Mad Max Fury Road is a little too timeless, and it's already starting to feel like it's 10 years old or it's a month old.
Oh, F you, like, buddy. There's nothing wrong.
He's saying it's timeless. I know. It's a good thing.
Okay, good.
Yeah. like I can't place it in 2015 anymore. It's already kind of taken its place in this alternate timeline.
Yeah, well, it will always be there for us. It'll never leave us. It'll be our best friend moving into the future. Unlike things like You Got Mail, I can guarantee you that. All right, what else? I wrote stupid monster segment. What was I talking about? I don't know
Stupid monster segment.
I think I may have written that when the gargoyle first showed up and was like.
I was about to say probably the gargoyle because the gargoyle looks. Let's face it, it is not. It suffers from the baby face kind of horror, which I can't stand. Which is like Gremlins. You know the gargoyles. Yeah. It's not hard and edgy, and it's kind of just blobby and round and
It was lame, and it had you know animatronic lips that didn't.
It looked good.
It was fine,
but it's just. It's not my kind of horror.
It's something off in the background in Return of the Jedi is what it reminded me of. Like some kind of weird, like, okay, well, you guys are rigging up that weird thing while, Bib Fortuna is talking to Jabba. Right? And Jabba himself is like wasn't Jabba like six midgets or something? Or six tiny people running it?
Right,
all up inside it? Yeah.
All up inside it.
The only other thing I wrote here is these movies have, and they all have this problem, they all run the risk of the last one being the only one you think about or talk about, because when you change directions in the middle of a movie with a new story, right? So you have story, boom, that one's done, next story, and the only through line is lady who's going to eat a kid. by the end of it, you're left with the final one, and that's the one that sticks with you because you've changed gears so much. I don't think our brains are good at going, all right, so back to the mummy and the Christian Slater moments. Yeah. You just don't think about it.
This is my theory about the original Kings of Comedy. Do you remember this?
No.
Four comedians in a stand-up movie?
But I remember Kings of Comedy.
Yeah.
So the original Kings of Comedy movie comes out, and for the first time that I recall, everybody I know goes to watch a movie in the movie theater that is just nothing but stand-up comedy. Mm. And the problem you're going to have with this, if you're seeing it for the first time, is the order of the comedians, right? Because you don't want to deliver the best thing first, but you sure don't want to deliver the worst thing first, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, like, this is like this genius ordering of comics, and it ends with
Cedric the Entertainer.
No, the one who died, Bernie Mac.
Oh, Bernie Mac.
Bernie Mac is by far the best.
It ends with Bernie Mac. And you go into that last segment going, there's no way Bernie Mac is going to be funnier than what I've just experienced. And sure enough, he murders everyone in there with his jokes. And I was feeling that way about this movie a lot. I was like, man, I find myself clinging to the first segment, not the witch, but the zombie, the mummy segment.
Mummy.
And I had a hard time like not comparing everything else to it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the idea, right? You got and they did do their first one's intriguing and mystery filled. Last one is tragic and maybe more in depth. And then the middle one's this weird piece of meat, you know? Like this weird piece of meat.
What am I even eating here, Stephen King? What is this?
It's just like a way to say, hey, our middle act
this is like
strange.
What is that meat with the pickles or olives in it? What is that?
Oh, head cheese or not head cheese, olive loaf.
Olive loaf. Yeah, that's what it is. It's olive loaf,
or
right?
Pimento loaf. Yeah. Dude, olive cheese.
Olive cheese.
That sounds awful. It's just interesting. Like Four Rooms had a weirder deal because it had to do four of these, and so there is no middle point. But
but the through line obviously in that one is the dude himself, is the busboy or the bellboy
for sure. But there's no like you can't really look at one of. I'm trying to think of which one of those is the equivalent of the cat one. I guess it's probably the dead bodies and the.
Oh no, it's the
bed thing. No.
No, it's the cat for me the cat one is the same as that one where it's Jessica Biel and the guy holding the gun and it's just 10 minutes of how do I get this guy to untie me
me
and Jessica Biel go or Jessica not Jessica Biel Jessica
Was it Jessica Biel?
A Flashdance woman.
Yeah, that's Jessica Biel, isn't
it? Yeah, Jessica Biel. Yeah.
Yeah, Jessica Biel. She's a maniac, on the floor.
I was confusing her with the woman who was in. She's married to Justin Timberlake.
Oh,
Jessica.
Oh, Not her first name is not Jessica. That's what's throwing you off.
It's Beals. That's why. That's right. Yes.
Is it Jessica Beals? There's no Jessica.
No. It's not Jessica. It's
Andrea.
Okay, who are we talking about now?
The woman that's married to Justin Timberlake. Jessica Biel.
No.
Is it Jessica Biel?
No.
It is Jessica Biel. So
it is Jessica Biel.
Wait. Who's the
Flash
other one?
Flashdance. Jennifer Beals.
Oh, Flash Jennifer. Shit.
That's what's completely throwing me off. Yeah. The damn straw had a damn Jennifer Biel stuck in it.
Dude, Jessica Biel, you know, the Justin Timberlake one?
Yeah.
She's gorgeous, dude.
Oh, she really is. Yeah.
How did that fuzzy-headed freaking goofball end up with her?
Because he's a triple threat and an American treasure, Scott.
I guess so. Anyway, yeah. What was our point there? Oh, middle bit's always the gross part.
Middle bits.
So if you guys were to, I mean, would you be interested today in a 2017 context if somebody said, hey, we're reviving Tales from the Crypt and we're making a movie, or we're revising the Creepshow and we're going to make a movie? Would you be all up in that, or would that be, I don't know if that's a thing anymore. I don't know if we can do it.
I'm
a fan. It's unfair to ask me because I'm a fan of the entire concept and history of all of this. So it would be kind of like, I don't know, when people get excited about a new X-Men movie, it's like, I'm excited about the whole history of it. Mm. It's kind of how it is for me from this Tales from the Crypt and Tales from the Dark Side and Creepshow.
Randy, how about you?
Totally 100% uninterested in anthology style movies. Mm. Now, I will sit and binge watch 20 hours of it on Netflix. So don't, you know, I'm just saying, like, feature film that wraps up 3 20-minute long stories, no, not at all interested.
You wouldn't be interested in a star-studded event of all these actors, just super hot actors, they're hot right now, doing these different little stories and doing cameos. You wouldn't be interested.
And you nailed it with the MCU. If it was a Marvel wrap-up, right, and it was like, we have these characters that we don't really have a feature film for, but we have shorter stories. We're going to put them all together.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You just pleased Ibbot greatly.
Oh my gosh. You just pleased me greatly.
Yeah, right? That's like a great idea.
Totally, you know, some of these characters, like, I don't care about the, you know, we're never going to see a Warlock from the New Mutants full length film, a little
Nightcrawler or Warlock.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No. This is
totally the way to do it.
That's a brilliant idea. Like, what would stop Marvel from taking lesser knowns and, you know, put Squirrel Girl in there for 15 minutes and put whoever? I mean, I know she's coming to that TV show on Spike or whatever it is.
And maybe that's how you could do. See, there you go. Here's how you do it. You do it as like stories from The Collector or something like that. And so you've got a little Howard the Duck vignette in there. You've got the talking dog that you see a little bit in Guardians of the Galaxy, who was much more of a character, Astro or Roofer or whatever his name was.
Right.
You could do, like, that's how you could do it. The Collector could be the glue that holds all those stories together, and in it's an anthology of how the Collector came to possess.
Yes, this is brilliant.
They screw it up and have Iron Man. It's in the middle of it.
No. Here's what you do. No, that's okay too. But here's what you do. You get who played the Collector in Guardians?
Benicio del Toro.
Yeah, you get Benicio del Toro to do it. And but every time he's like, I remember the time I went to Planet Bing Bong and picked up a deal.
Exactly.
Oh, exactly. I love that. I actually genuinely love that idea. That's a great idea.
I hope you get my point, right? Which is, why not just team them up and have a story with all of these different characters doing something like Guardians of the Galaxy do? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want a movie where it's like, here's 20-minute Star-Lord story. Now here's a 20-minute Gamora story. I don't want that. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think you want to see, like, Moon Knight teaming up with Warlock teaming up
with... Yes, I do.
Howard the Duck.
Stop right there.
You're wrong. Let me correct you.
You had me at... just like, yes, I do.
All right. Here's who did this right. Basically, what we're asking for is what the Animatrix was, in a way. The Animatrix while animated, which gives it a different twist, is a... It really is just an anthology series of different things set in the Matrix universe. So this one's ancient, this one's new, this one's a little of both. This one's super weird. This one's more modern or whatever. And they just kind of had these short 15-minute animated full stories, and I loved them all. I loved everything about that stuff. So
very Aeon Flux in one of them, if I remember correctly. Oh, it might have even been the same animator.
Yeah, it was the same artist, right?
Peter, what's his name? Or Peter Yu, was it? Peter Wang? Peter Wang. That's not a name. Yeah. You don't want to be Peter Wang. The point is... The point is, you could totally pull that off, and I would want to, if it's smart, tight writing, like, all it is like, here's a night where Moon Knight is up on the roof looking for trouble, and along comes, I don't know, some other character, and they team up for the next 15 minutes, and they used to not like each other, but at the end of this, there's respect, and they go their separate ways. Like, I think you could do that and make it really entertaining and fun. And
the Sentry, or Alpha Flight, or...
Yeah, get those Canadians in there, man. I want Alpha Flight in general. I just think Canadian superheroes are the best.
I do too. Yeah.
Sorry, I need to save your life. Sorry, I'm saving your life. Sorry.
Anyway. You know what anthology movie we haven't even talked about that we even watched here on FilmSack was Trick or Treat.
Oh, yeah.
I actually had that right here.
The little scarecrow head was the through line through that one.
Yeah, I forgot.
I had that right here. Did we do that one?
Yes, we did. We did Trick or Treat.
We did.
Yeah, let's unpack it the other direction. There's a Justice League movie coming later this year.
Mm-hmm.
And let's imagine that I told you, you know what? Instead of a Justice League movie, what we've got is a series of 25-minute segments, and one has Batman, and one has Wonder Woman, and one has freaking Khal Drogo, and you would just be like, but.
Yeah, you'd want them to be together
for that. I mean, you could do that with like the Blue Beetle and Lobo, and those would be your anthology characters. You can't do that with Superman and Wonder Woman.
It's the other way around. None of those are big enough for a segment, is what I'm saying.
Oh, I disagree. I think you could. Okay, so again, maybe this is just this is best suited for animation or something. And DC already kind of does this, but to see a collection of shorts about various DC heroes. I think already exists, actually, but in an animated form makes perfect sense to me. Here's Superman dealing with something to deal with his dying father, and then here's a segment of Batman being faced with his worst enemy yet, or whatever. And then there's a thing with Aquaman, and there's very little crossover. I don't have a problem with that. That sounds all right. I'd watch that. But again, for whatever reason, that feels animated to me and not live action movie. It feels like something I'd get on DVD or Blu-ray.
By the way, Justice League movie with Aquaman. Better not be more than 2 minutes in the sea. If that movie ends up in the ocean for a long time, I'm going to be so bored.
There will be. There's going to be something in the water.
Can we chase Darkseid over here by the water, guys? Yeah. Come on, push him. Like, take him over here, Wonder Woman. Yeah.
That was what the original animated series was like, as far as I'm concerned. My memories of it were that they would drag bad guys over to the ocean so Aquaman could participate.
kite him over here.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong. I think that maybe they're, but you can, I guarantee you, if you have an entire movie where Aquaman is out of water, there's no way they do that. He's in the water for a hunk of this. There has to be.
Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah, he's out of it in the trailer, but in the...
Flying around Metropolis.
But in the teaser, he's in... in the earlier teasers for this, and in the second Man of Steel movie, the Batman v Superman thing where they did show him briefly, he's all in the water all the time. Yeah. So I'm with you, dude, 100%. It's part of the problem with Aquaman, period. But... there's no way they don't have a bunch of water scenes. They have to. And it's going to suck. It'll suck.
It has to be. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it'll suck. Don't get me wrong, but they'll do it. And also people out there going, oh, there's no Superman in this. How can you have it Justice League without Superman? I promise you Superman will be in this movie. I promise you.
Yeah. Spoiler alert without even seeing the film.
Yeah.
Superman will be in there.
Fret not. Superman will show up in the Justice League.
It would be really funny if they just mentioned him. And never actually, like, he never actually participates in any
Or actually, keep cutting to the coffin he's in and having the rocks dancing up and down on him. Then cut back to more stuff with Wonder Woman.
Oh, I love that. And then end the whole movie with the rocks. And the whole thing looks like the end of the last one with the rocks moving as if it's a cliffhanger. Exactly. That's a really good idea. I love it. All right, I'm going to play clips. We have clips. Here's What is this? Oh, Debbie Harry on the phone is what I wrote. I put Harry on the phone. But
call me.
I forgot to put Debbie. Anyway, here you go.
Do you have eight?
No.
Well, you bring your six and Mitch and I will drink out of jelly glasses or something. Of course, I'm going to a lot of trouble for a dinner party. I always go to a lot of trouble for a dinner party.
Mm-hmm. All right. I hate phone calls where you repeat everything so the audience
exactly.
can hear.
Exactly.
Hate it.
No, I will not go to a lot of trouble. Blah, blah, blah. We need to... It's funny that she's so bad in this, but she was actually pretty good in... What was it? Videodrome. It was her and James Woods.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And there's... I think I'm remembering a candle wax on nipple scene or something.
Nah.
Whoa.
But it's... But it does seem like that like right. sci-fi horror thing mix that I think would be good.
For I've seen that movie in forever.
Was it James Woods nipples or her nipples?
I think it was James Woods nipples, honestly. Oh. I don't even think it was hers. I don't think she's ever done nudity.
All right. Well, sign me up for Video Drone then. I wrote this kid is ticked.
What difference does it make? Let me out of here. Help!
It's kind of hard. He's too cute. I can't take him seriously when he's yelling.
So they have like a little person with a voice synthesis thing in that. It doesn't sound like a little kid. It sounds like
He is really cute.
Warwick and that's Davis with a video with auto-tune.
Yeah.
I wish they had stuck with cute and not made him sly in the very last shot.
Mm.
You know, the very last thing in this whole movie is him eating a cookie and looking into the camera.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, you made him too self-aware.
What'd you think of the fake branded chips, though, or cookies? It was called Chips.
Of course I noticed those.
Chips they were a lot. Chips a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, so
they
good.
Were $1.49.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were $1.40. In 1990, that was a lot of money.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm just here to say
But
that
apparently they were crap because the kid just crushed them up on the floor.
That's true.
Yeah. And why did it look like a clearance sticker if they were so good?
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. But also, I just love fake brands in movies. I love it when they're trying to get around having to do product placement. Because they don't want to pay or whatever. Chips a lot is awesome. Freaking right. Love that. The kid is not enunciating is what I wrote here.
Help, there's a crazy woman in here.
Okay, I don't know what he said.
You, help, there's a crazy woman in here.
Let me try it again.
Help, there's a crazy woman in here.
It's just a little, you know?
Exactly.
I don't know what this is.
It's like gutting a fish. First you make a long slit, then you take out everything that isn't meat.
Okay. That's how you make a fish.
It isn't meat.
I don't know, entrails are still meat.
Yeah, it's all meat. She's saying you take out all the bones.
Yeah. She's saying eat everything.
Well, no, you take out the guts.
The organs.
Yeah, she says.
The organs.
She went on.
Organs,
yeah. She says you take out the intestines and all the heart stuff and the organs, and then you just eat the meat, the muscle.
So yummy.
Yeah. Here's our boy.
You know, Lee, I think the most work you've done in 4 years of college is filling out that application for the Penrose Fellowship.
He just has that thing.
exposition.
Yeah. Remember that whole setup that we don't want to spend too much time on because this is only a 15-minute segment? Here's Hard Work Pays Off.
Hard work pays off, Andy.
No, that's all that was.
That's true.
Well, hard work pays off. That one perfectly.
Here's Steve Buscemi walking in.
It's an odd coincidence, us meeting, since we were both in heated competition for the Penrose Fellowship.
Gosh, this Penrose Fellowship. Just they won't stop talking about it.
You get the Penrose Fellowship by talking about it the most. that's who wins it.
Victor Von Penrose will not give up his fellowship unless you mention it more. Here's Buscemi saying this. Really, I do not like the way he says this. So here it is.
I loathe Zuni aesthetics.
Ugh. Listen to that one more time.
I loathe Zuni aesthetics.
You can just hear his lips smacking and it's just... aesthetics. I hate it. Freaking hate it. Here's a funny Okay, so there's that. It's a little sexual, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, stop.
Yeah, I won't do that again. Oh, yes, I will. I did it one more time. It looks... I don't know what this is.
It looks just like your father.
What's that from? Looks like your father. Which one was that from? Hold on.
It looks just like your father.
Oh, that was from the Mummy when they were unwrapping the Mummy.
Oh, yeah.
Christian Slayer.
I did half my clips for the Mummy one. It turns out. This is kind of gross.
First thing the embalmers did was to stick a metal hook up his nose, and they dragged his brain out through his nostrils.
Yeah, something about Steve Buscemi's the way he talks. I don't know what it is. It's always been gross. Hey, oh, Ibbot, look what I got here. I got a clip. This is a clip of the girl you took to prom. This is what she said later.
Oh, finally we get to hear what she sounds
like. Yeah, and she said this is why, it gives the reason why she would never go out with you again. Okay, so this was her reason. Okay. So you can finally, this is some closure for you. All right, here you go.
I give the guy a hard-on.
All right, see, that was it. She was tired of giving you a boner. And that
was seemed like such a non sequitur. I wish you had the whole sequence.
Yeah, the whole thing. Because was
it was like, hey, I don't want you to go. I don't want you to go out. Like, there's weird things going on. Yeah, but I need to go. I need to go, like, see what he's up to. And then he's like, no, but don't. And she's like, I give the guy a hard on. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's why? Like, did you say that?
It was such a weird thing. Like, well, to throw him off the scent that we cheated on this paper or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, that seems weak.
She really had no emotion in this thing. Like, when that mummy was coming after her, she had the stone face of like...
Nobody had any emotion whatsoever. Like his best friend and his sister die. Yeah. And Christian Slater's like, well, I guess I better just have a seat here and maybe drink some whiskey.
Yeah. They were all very amoral people. Everybody in that. All right. Here's TV on in the background. It was actually Night of the Living Dead going on back there. Or maybe it was... Day of the Dead. Whatever. Here it is. I always like hearing that for whatever reason. Julianne Moore made this sound. All right.
Really?
Yeah. It's when she saw the body. She made that sound. She goes, "Mom, Parker," whatever his name was, Bill. And then after she saw his face all torn up.
Oh, yeah, right.
This is a pretty good line.
I'm going to start a little fire under your chair and roast your nuts.
Yeah. Right on, buddy.
I guess that's something you do.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Look, Mads Mikkelsen used to pound James Bond's nuts with a sack of rocks or whatever he used to
do. Yes, but he was like a true henchman bad guy. This is Christian Slater, a college student. Like, it just was weird to me that he was suddenly a torturer.
That's true.
And he's living in the same building, too. So you set Buscemi's room on fire, you might have the chance of ruining your own room.
Yeah. All rooms are at risk when you set Buscemi's room on fire. Here's a weird why.
Why?
I just like how he says it.
Why?
Why?
Okay.
Why?
Are you sure that's not Trump?
It does sound.
Why?
It sounds a little
wrong.
Like him. Wrong.
Why?
All right, here's Uncle Lewis and a New York doll.
You are Mr. Halston, aren't you?
That's me.
Tell the driver to wait.
Jeez. All right, buddy.
Love him.
He's pretty great. Seeing him in a wheelchair reminded me of his role in Nightmare Before Christmas, where he's the little
boy. Yeah, right. It totally does, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty great. What's this? I don't know.
I don't make jokes.
Yeah, you do. You're my favorite. Funniest thing of the thing.
I wonder if he's ever done any books on tape.
Oh, dude. Speaking
of books on tape, a very, very brief appearance of George Guidel in this movie.
Shut up. Where was he? I love him. Where was he in this?
In the first bit, the first of the three.
Yeah.
In the mummy bit.
Yeah.
He's the dean? Yeah, he's a museum guy.
Oh, okay.
I love his voice. I need to go back and hear that now. I would have capped it had I known. I had no idea. Oh, my gosh. George Guidel, so good. He's amazing.
His character is named Museum Director in the film.
Is he the one that's disappointed that there's no mummy inside the case when he opens it? Is that the guy?
When he opens
I remember
he opens up the sarcophagus.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
That would have been a better find if it came with the mummy.
Oh, man.
George Guidel.
Ah, I would have loved to have capped it. All right.
Who is, I think, my favorite audiobook narrator.
Oh, he's by far mine. You introduced him to me. You were the first one I ever... In fact, it was American Gods, which is timely since that's about to be a TV show that people are already raving about. I can't wait to see it. You were the one that said you should hear this, and it's mainly because of who's reading it. And that's when I found out who that was and then went back and tried to find everything else. And Lordy B, he did most of the Dark Tower books, and that was like... I mean, I'd read the Dark Tower books, but I hadn't heard them. And I went and redid them all with him. Oh, my gosh. He's so good.
Yeah, seriously. George Guidel's performance in Wizard and Glass and then the next one, the fifth one.
Yeah.
What's it called? The Wolves of the Cala.
Wolves of the Cala. Yeah, he's amazing in both those.
Yeah, his performance in those two books is just like the greatest thing ever done for audiobooks.
He went back and redid the first one, too, so you can get Gunslinger with him. And it's also extremely well done. He did it later, though. after he did the other two. Anyway, here's a lady coughing that's gross. All right, so here you go. What's her deal? What's going on with
her? It's flashback echoey cough, too. It's the right. Willie Mickey's sister.
Yeah, William Mickey. Sitting right, at the right. table. She was the that's first a... one to go.
You want it? You got it.
Here's
that's Alice Drummond from Ghostbusters, who was menstruating, right?
What?
Or maybe she wasn't. The one from librarian. The library?
Yeah, she was the librarian.
Oh,
right?
Really? Oh, you're right. That is her. Mm-hmm. Wow, good catch.
She just can't catch a break.
No.
No.
Give her a break. She surely deserves it. Here's one. Here's this lady. I wrote this lady. I don't know what it means.
He's so hungry, darling. He's so hungry.
No, seriously, put her out of her misery, dude.
Oh, my God.
So bad.
Oh, it's really bad, yeah. Is you hungry?
Can we talk about baby talk for just a minute?
Yeah.
Is this an expose that we really need right. to stop baby yeah, talk?
Stop right now.
We do. We absolutely do. I heard a woman in public doing baby talk, not to a baby either. Mm. It was in the grocery store. She was just talking to another woman. And I don't know why, but it just made my skin crawl.
No, it's awful when they do it like that. Here's the thing, though. There is a biological evolutionary imperative that we do it with our children. There's nothing weird about that. It's how they gain language. It's how they learn. It's how you are able to convey feelings of emotion. This is the reason we do it with dogs, because it kind of has the same effect. They're sort of dumb creatures that haven't developed yet. And unlike babies, they're never going to be much smarter. But, you know, there's a reason that exists. It's part of our... It's part of our thing. But when you start going, oh, I just love that adorable coat you're wearing, and you're talking to a friend of yours, that sucks.
It's the worst. And I never did baby talk with my own baby. Like, yeah. It didn't come out of me. I don't think that's why
your baby is the most serious baby.
No, I don't think it's a choice between baby talk and you're an old curmudgeon. I really think it's just, this is something that some people choose to do because they like it. And I don't, it hurts.
Yeah. I think there's obviously going to be variation across the board.
No, I'm sorry, Randy. We was talking, but there
now, if you're going to go there, like, that's all right.
But there's a, yeah, it's an interesting, my sister had some, I think it was on TMS maybe. But anyway, we were talking about some of the things parents do that they do involuntarily and they don't know why they do it. And that was one of them in the list, but there was other stuff too about the way you feed them, why they're so cute is part of their survival, like crazy, like hundreds of thousands of years of evolution of human evolution.
Right.
Come into the
because
fact
because we killed all the ugly babies.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, right.
Well, you know,
I'd like to know how the species survived, because none of them come out cute. They all come out so scary ugly.
Yeah.
And I don't get, like, back in a time when people were killing babies.
But if you wait for like 24 hours, they kind of fluff up. It's kind of like when you get one of those mattresses through the mail.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
Once in a while, you'll see like a C-section baby who looks fine. It's the ones that have to come through the pipe, you know, the ones that have to squeeze through the straw.
I'm going to have to make the trip out.
They get all puffy and their eyes are all swollen and they're like, oh my gosh, the worst vagina trip I ever took.
Right.
Exactly.
You never guess what I just had to do to get here.
hey, mom. Hey, dad. What's going on? All right. Here's what did I write here? This is, it's a story.
My goodness. That was a scary story.
No, that's what that was. We'll just keep that for
now. Thank goodness.
Thank goodness. I wrote this thing.
If I let you go, you must swear you'll never see you saw me.
Okay. Ugh. Something about that voice and the way that thing moved was really disconcerting. You know what I mean?
It was.
The way the lips moved and then the way that thing talked. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And his kill moves were freaking awesome. I mean, swipe, arm flies off, swipe, right. Head rotates around 180 degrees. It was good.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Here's, I didn't like his wings though. They were dumb. Those are dumb wings. Here's grossest thing in the movie. You ready? Grossest thing in the movie. I'm now going to tell you what I thought was the grossest thing, but with a clip. Here it is.
Oh yeah,
James Remar yakking in an alleyway.
Yeah,
you don't.
What grossed me out even worse? Oh, was it? Are you about to say it?
No, I was just gonna say. It's the delay of the splash from the grunt for me.
Yes,
that didn't bother me at all. It was his close talking with the girl after that. I mean, he just puked.
He did not have a mint, right?
No.
Yeah.
I don't even care if he had a mint. I'd still be thinking about it.
I'll take care of you. Don't worry. Come follow me. We're going to totally have sex tonight. Yeah. It's gross. And it's just that delay. Right here. Oh, gosh, dang it. I have to apologize. I probably triggered a bunch of listeners who were all
Yeah, it's up. Getting worse every time. So yeah. Maybe one more?
No, no more. This is called Creepy Dude.
I need more of it.
Oh, yeah, he needs more of it.
I need more of it.
Pretty creepy. Creepy to say that to anybody, especially about the sexual intercourse you've had. Here's one. It's a head sound. I don't know what that means. Head sound?
Boop.
All right, here it is. Oh, getting the head cut off. That's the sound they used for the guy's head getting whacked off.
Yeah.
The slice?
Yeah. But it was in the retrospective one where he's remembering it, though. So it's a little dreamy, you know. Okay. It's not exactly right. Also, I wrote, here's the title of this clip. What the crap, 1990? ? All right. So here it is.
Preston and I are celebrating the 10th anniversary of the night we first met.
You mean when you thought he was going to push you up against the wall and rape you?
Yes, darling.
What the hell?
Right.
That's awful, man.
You don't like to hear the word rape come out of a kid's mouth.
No, ever. Like you guys already know I hate it when little kids in movies are swearing. I hate it. It just makes me feel like their parents are shitty for whatever reason. Again, who knows why I feel that way, but it just bugs me. And then, but this is worse to me. Plus, when would you sit down with your kid and go, let me tell you about the night your father and I met. Right. He pushed me up against the wall as if to rape me. Like, come on, dude.
His mouth reeked of puke.
I take it the other direction, though. Imagine that the kid has come across this concept somewhere else and is trying to name it. Like, you had that, right, Scott, where your kid would come home from school and tell you something just abhorrent, and you're like, where did you get that?
Yeah, I did this when I was a kid. I'll never forget this. My parents were in the living room talking to friends, very politely all sitting around in chairs talking. I was on my way home from school, and on my way on the sidewalk, in chalk was written the F word, and I'd never heard it before. Okay. I was like 7 years old. I'd never heard this thing. It was one of my earliest memories. So I come in the house, I bust in, and I remembered very specifically, my brain said, hey, remember when mom and dad said you can come to us with anything? Anytime you have a question about anything, you come and talk to us because we're always here for you, son. I remembered that feeling and went, I'm going to go do it. And I opened the door and I went in and they're all sitting around and they go, hey, Scotty, what's up? And I said, what does boot mean? Right in front of these people. And my parents were like, up dip, we'll talk about this later. And part of the reason I think that the it's so fresh in my head and I never forget it is because they reacted so freaked out. They were so freaked out because there were people there. And I came in and just dropped an F-bomb right in the room. Anyway, the point is, yes, your kids do this.
Did you?
But she didn't react properly. So if that's the case here, listen to the tail end of the clip.
Preston and I are celebrating the 10th anniversary of the night we first met.
You mean when you thought he was going to push you up against the wall and rape you?
Yes, darling.
Yes, darling. But he was a gentleman. He waited until he got back to his flat, and then he raped me.
So
that's the point at which you know she's the gargoyle.
Right.
Well, that's actually a good point. I kind of knew the whole time, but if I hadn't known up till then, I might have known right then and forward. All right, final quote. This is the gargoyle expressing love before killing a dude.
And I love you, too.
Prepare to die, though. I loved you too.
Was that Raydon Chong's voice?
Right, slow down.
I don't think so. Yeah. Maybe. You can do a lot with voice modulation, but maybe. Yeah. It's hard to say.
I want to know because I actually found myself looking at the credits like, okay, where's going to be the alternate voice for whatever her name is? Carloa or
Carola. Carola.
Yeah. Carola. Toyota Carola.
You got it. Here's an example of before changing the voice.
Good dog. Day.
And here it is after.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Ving Rhames.
Thank you.
Ving Rhames filter.
You can. Yeah. You can really do that.
You really can. That's going to do it for clips. That means we are primed and ready for this. Oh, I've got it right over here. It's the film sack checklist. Here it is. I had to have some Foley work to have, you know, some paper here.
You can go a long way in 5 seconds.
Right.
Again. Uncle Lewis got it easy. Check. One tiny bit of your balsa wood sculpture goes bad and you trash the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
Check.
Oh, he had such anger issues.
I hate that artist trope. Artists are so picky.
That was architecture. That wasn't art.
I don't know. What
I mean,
that
I know
was.
There's some architects out there who are going to argue, of course, architecture is art. But I mean, but it wasn't the stuff that he was doing otherwise.
No, he was
that
drawing
wasn't art nor architecture. That was too much free time. That's what you were looking at.
And finally, Tommy Chong's kid gets it on with Dexter's dad. Check. It's pretty good. Let's move on to Star Trek connections. There are three. Mark Margolis. He was Gage, in the Cat from Hell segment. In TNG, he played Dr. Nell Apgar in the episode A Matter of Perspective. Christian Slater, of course, who played Andy in Lot 249. Was night duty officer in Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country.
Night duty.
He's also a huge Star Trek fan, I guess. Anyway.
Duty.
Barbara duty. Barbara Harris, she was a ADR voice casting person who did just the casting. She was also voice casting director for the last 8 Star Trek films and several Star Trek video games. Soundtrack great. I give it an S for shit. I don't think it was any good. It was kind of poop. I actually don't remember it, really. It's not.
I just want to come back a second. I will never forgive Star Trek for that Christian Slater cameo in that movie.
Why? Oh.
Why? It just ruins
it. It so takes me out of that movie.
You know what happened to me recently with that? I was watching the finale of The Expanse, a show I really like on sci-fi. And the very final scene has Adam Savage from Mythbusters as one of the crew members of this science vessel. It's kind of an important scene, and completely takes me out of the scene.
Stunt casting kind of thing.
They're doing that with The Expanse, and some of it is like people you've never heard of, but like a famous executive from some nerd company like Oracle or something.
Yeah,
and then some of it's like this where it's just blatant.
Yeah, I love that show, but that bugged me. And I don't want to spoil anything, but the character is no more. Let's say that.
Scott, while we're on the subject, I would like to recommend The Expanse audiobooks.
Yeah, they're also really good. I'm on book 3 and I've been doing the reading version of it, but I love the audiobooks are excellent. They're really good.
I feel like for most audiences you should read the books before you watch the TV show.
Yeah.
Cuz the show is very complicated otherwise.
It really is. It's an incredible feat of world building that is very hard to pull off, and the books really help with that. It's made me appreciate both of them more as a result, but people should be watching The Expanse. Season 3 coming up soon. Watch for it. Catch it on sci-fi. Siffy. Here's your Twitter post. This is where 140 characters or less. You guys sum this damn thing up. Let's start with Randy.
Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. It's the anthology film that will make you say, I give the guy a hard-on.
Yes! It's true, you do. Brian Dunaway.
Gross. Tales from the Dark Side, like a mouthful of bushimi teeth. Hard to look at. Even harder to look away. Open your eyes.
Yeah, his teeth are, even then.
It is a mouthful of bushimi teeth, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I love that guy, though. He's so great.
Oh, gotta love him. Oh, my goodness. If I wish I had the confidence that I've had bad teeth like that. And my teeth aren't great. But if my teeth were like that, and I just said, whatever.
You know what? If you looked at this all, if you looked anything like Steve Buscemi, it takes a great deal of struggle to do what he's doing. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Anybody could look in the mirror.
He's a man.
If you're 16-year-old Steve Buscemi, you look in the mirror and you go, well, shit. You know, like, what am I going to do about this?
And instead, I got to work with.
Instead, he's like, I've got passion, I got plans, I got stuff, I'm going to do it. And he made it happen, and he's like an accomplished dude. I think it's really cool.
He is. Yeah. And he's a really talented actor. I mean, he's, you know, it's not just I look different and I'm just going to go ahead and play, you know, play goofy characters. No, I mean, he plays great characters, plays really, really good roles.
Yeah, he shot him in the face.
It's so hard to do. Like, imagine being as ugly as Adam Driver and being a really good actor. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, like, someone's got to finish. Someone has to finish what you started.
Yeah. Steve Buscemi is actually uglier than Adam Driver, but he's a good enough actor, and it's got to be really hard to break through your own looks and get parts.
I agree.
Right?
I totally agree. And not.
And I don't even like using the word ugly because I don't consider Buscemi ugly. I just consider him unique looking.
Yeah,
not, different, exactly. Different from the norm. Different from
non-conforming, non-standard.
Yeah, I'll say he's right, ugly. He's ugly. It's fine. I don't mind saying it. But I will say,
I think Buster Poindexter face offends me more than Buscemi.
Have you seen him of lately? Course. That guy can't talk normal. He's something's up with that guy. I think it's some drug thing.
Right.
He's something's real weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've heard.
Once again, I love unique looking people.
Interview recently, and he was something's up with him. But Buscemi, I loved Boardwalk Empire like with a passion. I loved that show. It has everything I like in it. But he was great in that, and he was an executive producer and was behind a lot of the writing and directing. And yeah, Buscemi. Props to Buscemi. Prop Shemmy, we'll call him from now on. where were we? Dunaway. Oh, we did Dunaway. Ibbot.
Oh, we did.
Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. I think segment two was just an excuse for Stephen King to write a scene where a cat kills a dude from the inside.
Probably.
I think so, too.
I think it was, too.
Yeah. Probably.
It's like, all right, here's a really cool thing I want to do. How do I write a story around that?
I really thought that he was going to possess Buster Poindexter and make him like stand above a marionette.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I'm surprised that didn't happen either.
Great. Yes. Yeah.
And that's how what's his name should have died. That's how you kill Hickey.
Right. Right.
I think it just would have been a better twist if, like, after that, the cat hops up on Hickey's lap and curls up and starts purring. Says, "Very good. I'll bring you something more to eat tomorrow."
Right.
Yeah. That's not bad either. We're better writers than these guys.
Yes.
I don't know. I like once you've blown my mind with the big twist, I don't need more twists. Like I gotta let's just let that go.
But the
now.
Cat one never had a twist. They could have used one.
The cat coming out of the dude was the twist. Trust me.
We saw the cat go into the dude.
Yeah, that seemed twisty too.
Like, and he hung out for like, I guess, 8 hours or something.
Yeah, just chilling in there. Just relaxing, chillaxing inside of.
Did you bring me some onions out of his belly?
I love it. All right, it's this. This was just handed to me. I have another paper here. This is alternative titles. It says here at the top. This is what this movie was almost called: The Empire Strikes Cats.
Yeah.
Oh man. Or Clawshank Redemption. Oh my gosh.
Ooh, I like that one.
Just
that
full of them today. It's amazing. Email from Dylan wrote in. Says this comes to us at filmsack@gmail.com. He says, "Hello, Filmsack crew. Just want to let you know that it has taken me until episode 331 of Filmsack to realize that John Ratzenberger and Cliff Clavin are not two different actors with remarkably similar voices. I have often heard Brian do his Cliff Clavin voice, Brian Ibbett that is, and knew that it sounded an awful lot like the guy in all those Pixar movies."
Wow.
I've never seen a single episode of Cheers because I am a dirty millennial. Thanks for confusing me for so long. Love the show, guys. Dylan. So I love email. That is awesome. And it's always good when we're teaching somebody something. But yes, John Ratzenberger, responsible for both Cliff Clavin and
John Ratzenberger.
And John Ratzenberger the things he does. So, yeah, that guy. And he was, what was the reference, though? Because he was in
Firefox.
Firefox, yeah.
Bring those hoses over here.
Yeah, get over here. You do it better than anybody. I don't even want to try. Your Cliff Clavin is kind of untouchable. It's pretty good.
I was surprised we didn't get some more discussion around Firefox. That movie just asks so many questions that it doesn't answer. But I think it's because it's not streaming. Maybe people didn't have it.
Right.
Harder to get.
Like, is it over yet?
Yeah.
That question for sure.
Yeah, there was some of that. But I think part of it is it wasn't streaming. They'd have to rent it. I know some did. We got some chatter on Twitter about it. But I think that happens sometimes. But in this case, hey, you got no excuse, man. If you haven't watched Tales from the Dark Side, the movie, it's up there now and will be until the end of the month. So you have just a few days. So watch it. Send us those emails again, folks. Filmsack@gmail.com. Our next movie is... Oh, shoot. We just said it and I forgot. What is it?
Our next movie is Escape from New York.
That's it.
Yeah, we're going
back.
We did
say like about 45 movies, so it's understandable that we'd forget the one we talked about.
Yeah. We've seen Escape from L.A. We're now going to see the movie that started it all. It's not even a prequel. It's the original.
Right.
The non-sequel version, which happened in New York.
And timing couldn't be better on this because Kurt Russell is about to make his appearance as Star-Lord's father on right. Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Snake Plissken. Yeah.
It's a little too soon after Fast and the Furious 8 for me. I kind of don't want Kurt Russell to be the old guy in every movie.
Mm. Mm. That's interesting. But was he...
Whatever.
Is he... I forgot he was in those. But that's kind of his deal now.
He's a mysterious G-man who kind of has lots of powers and access to things.
Isn't that his deal now, though? I mean, what else is he going to do these days? That's kind of his job now. He's older and he's, people like
him. Is that the latest one?
Yes.
Fast and the Furious, where are they now? What is it?
No,
Fate of the Furious.
Fate of the Furious.
That's what it's called. And Kurt Russell is now doing what Tommy Lee Jones used to do in movies, basically.
Oh. Oh, right.
Search every outhouse, doghouse, chicken house. Is that what he...
Yeah, every... He doesn't care. I don't care. House. Yeah, he just doesn't care. That's what he doesn't do. No, I'm... I mean, look, I'm up for whatever they do with him. I think he's really great as an actor, but there's this awesome photo floating around of them on the set. James Gunn posted it, I think, on Twitter. Just like a random candid shot, but it's Chris... what's his name? Star-Lord. Pratt. Sitting there, and then Gamora sitting next to him, and they're just actor chairs, and they're looking at their phones, right? So those two are just like checking their email, whatever. And then the third chair is who we were just talking about?
Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell sitting in the third chair, asleep.
Oh, they're just reading a newspaper.
No, he's like all slumped over, just kind of like sleeping over there like an old geezer. And the other two are like millennial checking their Twitter.
Wake me up when it's time for me to read some lines. Where's my Goldie Hawn?
Made me laugh. It was pretty good.
I'll tell you, he was really good in that Marky Mark film. What's the name?
Oh, Deepwater Horizons. Great.
Death Trap. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was great in that. You're right. He was grizzled and awesome in that. Yeah,
he was great in Backdraft too.
Backdraft 2, the sequel. It's really good.
Backdraft as well.
Backdraft also. Anyway, so that's next week. Catch it here, right here on FilmSack. That's going to do it for us. FilmSack.com is the website. You can find us there and talk to blog people and have fun. It's a good time. You can also leave us those emails. I already mentioned that. Oh, and you can find us on Twitter at FilmSack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. Nothing. We'll see you next time.
I got to give a guy a hard on.
You asked for it,
you got it.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.